The podcast you're about to hear is made possible thanks to the generous supporters of patreon.com/Ian Bolesworth and patreon.com/burials and beyond. If you enjoy this podcast and you'd like to contribute and you'd like to get involved, there's tons of other content on both patrons as well, then please consider coming joining and helping the project along. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Loopholes, your weekly discussion podcast for all things esoteric and esoterotic. I am Kate Cheryl.
And I am Dr. Ian Bolesworth.
Lovely to have you here, Dr. Bolesworth.
Can I get in trouble for that, by the way, for saying that I'm a doctor?
Well, it depends what you're trying to obtain by using a doctor's credentials. If you're wanting to operate, yeah, there might be an issue.
Well, no, it's sort of a bit of credibility on here to give me a bit of authenticity. Yeah. Make it sound like I properly academically know what I'm on about.
Well, I mean, you can borrow mine whenever you want.
Yeah, but I don't want to get into a whole Gillian McKeith situation. You know, I don't want to be discredited in the media. And have everyone shout at me on social media as well. I just like the feedback that we're already getting. That's the thing about it. So I don't want it to turn into negative feedback. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Actually, that's a really good link to do the feedback straight away.
Seamless. Oh, wow.
Some nice comments. How were your comments on your Patreon this week?
Lovely.
Were they? Have you got them?
Yes.
Okay, well, do mine very, very quickly. Jenny said, I think it's totally reasonable that people try to market and monetize these investigations, and I tend to believe that most people perpetuating spookies are, stroke, were genuinely interested in them, but then goes on to say there is a high potential for manipulation, abusing, that sort of thing as well. I think we were remiss last week in that at one stage I said I would encourage people to just not watch them, and I didn't mean all of them. I meant the people that you can tell are doing things that are unpalatable.
Yes.
Going into cemeteries and interfering with graves and all that sort of thing. I didn't mean a blanket thing of all people doing ghost videos. They can do what they want. Just because I don't believe in any of it doesn't mean it can't exist as a form of entertainment.
Yeah.
Lewis Crawford Wilson mentioned that I talked about the Michael Jackson seance in an old podcast years and years back and said hearing me talk about it in a less flippant and more considered way than I had in the past is such a stark contrast. Loving this. And I can remember talking about it, but I don't remember what I said, and it might have been terrible.
Chances are, let's not go hunting for that recording.
Oh, it could have been really awful.
Yeah, oh, my mate June.
Yeah, exactly. Annette Truby made a point, really, about the whole idea of television, by which I would include as well YouTube and that sort of thing, paranormal videos, manipulating emotion to the point where people are sending cash and all that sort of stuff. But said she had no problem with faked haunting videos to be entertaining and all the rest of it, but it's ethically questionable when people are insisting that they're real.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's kind of the difference between like a spiritualist medium and a magician. You can still enjoy a magician even though they're showing their hand and you know it's a trick.
Ethics again, innit?
Yeah.
Paul Rawlings said, this is probably my favourite podcast right now. He said loads of other things, but that's the bit I sort of honed in on. And then I honed further in on probably. I didn't like the probably. I don't know if I can go into comments on Patreon and edit them. I might try that. And Stuart Bray and Craig Harrison asked about a watch party of the Michael Jackson seance, and we didn't say we were doing that, did we? We said we might do a commentary on it.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it live. Absolutely couldn't do it live. The way I watch things when I commentate on things that I'm watching in the privacy of my own home, I cannot risk doing that live. I'd have to just do it and then go, right, well, take that bit out where you said that. Take that bit out where you said that. So, no.
It would not be worth it.
No. And Craig also asked, are the Simply and the King t-shirts going to be available soon? I've just had a lot on my plate, Craig. I've got the artwork, but yeah, I'll send them off at some point to the people that do the merch, and we'll get them in time for Christmas, and they'll make a perfect Christmas gift. Let's see your comments.
Alongside my celebrity seance corner mugs, which I will insist will be an excellent Christmas gift for family and friends.
Right, okay.
I'm not having Simply and the King get all the love and adoration.
Well, I can't control that. If people like me and my bits best...
Oh, you're such a git. My comments, yeah, please. On. My lovely Patreon, patreon.com/burialsandbeyond. Jacqueline Davies says, this was a really cracking episode, a genuinely considered and fascinating discussion. And she also liked the running time because it allowed the conversation to develop, although she could have spent another hour just listening to us two talk about the Michael Jackson programme in Celebrity Seance Corner, because she said she sang as she typed it.
Okay.
Paul Kenny says, excellent episode, and he's just going to be commenting on my Patreon from now on, so he doesn't cancel out his comments. And he'd never thought about graveyards being private. He'd always thought that they were public, as he regularly goes in and takes photos. Should I be asking permission? I think broadly speaking, you're all right as long as you're not getting nude models and draping them over tombs, in which case there might be a few issues. But generally, photography is encouraged nowadays in most cemeteries.
I mean, it's not much of a stretch, is it, to work out what's inappropriate and what isn't in a graveyard.
Yeah.
It should really go without saying, shouldn't it? You know, the things we were saying about people going dangling things over graves and that. You shouldn't even need to say that. You shouldn't even need to point that out. So I would trust in Paul that Paul wouldn't know anyway.
Sophie Cleverly, who's a fellow goth,
right,
also thinks that there's a few blurred lines with the photography in graveyards.
Okay.
That she personally tries to always photograph much older graves, will only take photos of new ones because of interesting details, but she wouldn't pose with them because we all know that one of the prerequisites of being a goth is the ability to pose near dead things.
Now, why'd you do that? What's the...
So it's a very good point to raise.
What's the thinking behind that? Why'd you do that? Why'd you take pictures of yourself next to graves? I can understand it next to, like, I don't know, like Oscar Wilde's grave or Jim Morrison's grave or what have you. Even then, I'm like, ooh, but I get it because they become tourist destinations in a weird way.
Yeah, it's kind of thanatourism.
Yeah.
I think is the broad term for, like, death-related tourism or memorial-related tourism. But I think certainly the goth tradition of posing near old gravestones and things like that is just feeding into the Victorian Gothic aesthetic.
Right, okay.
You'll see goths posing next to big Victorian mausoleums and things like that, but you won't really see them draped over modern graves.
Yeah.
There's a strange little grey area there with goths, but in my world, they get a free pass.
Where would you draw the line? In a cemetery, where would you draw the line at behaviour? Mm-hmm. What's the worst thing you would do in a cemetery and still have a clear conscience?
I don't know, because I think...
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah, God.
I don't know where this has come from in my head, but I had a stereotypical assumption about goths that they do sex stuff in cemeteries, and I don't know where that's come from.
I know so many goths
and
so many people that enjoy cemeteries.
When you say enjoy...
In lovely, nice ways. But I don't think I know of anyone who has done anything sexual in a cemetery.
Right.
Although I know a lot of people who work in cemeteries.
Right.
And who frequently find people cruising or having it off behind a mausoleum.
Right, okay.
And those aren't gothy people.
No, well, I guess they're just looking for somewhere dark and out of the way, aren't they?
Yeah.
But I was thinking whether that is part of the goth culture, part of your lifestyle choices.
You get a special badge once you've had it off in a cemetery.
That's like the Scouts.
Yeah.
But it's a jet black badge that you'd have to look at really close up to even see what it said. I don't know why I thought that. Yeah. I mean, I apologise. I don't mean to be prejudicial against goths at all.
It seems fitting, doesn't it? Because with goths, there's a lot of sensual fabrics.
Is that
and
right?
There's a lot of looking melancholic. And so obviously being mauled near a tomb kind of fits in with that whole aesthetic. But I can't say I personally know anyone who's been going at it recently near the dead.
Do you know what? It's never occurred to me before ever. It's never even crossed my mind as a desire. But when you said that, then I thought, I'd quite like to be mauled near a tomb. Write in. Leave a comment if you'd be happy to maul me near a tomb. Oh, this has degenerated fast, hasn't it?
So, the rest of the comments are pretty lovely. Warren says, excellent podcast, folks. Craig Harrison says, bloody love that.
Cancelled out. This podcast
is absolutely
brilliant. Cancelled out. Cancelled himself out.
Oh, Craig.
I mean, they're allowed to comment on both. They can.
I know. He did say he needed to find a different way to say the same thing on your page.
Yeah.
Corinne Besant says, excellent work, you two, though Kate is wonderful. Lol.
So it's what's not being said there, isn't it? It's saying you're wonderful. So well done, both of you. But Kate is wonderful.
Yeah,
fine.
Yeah, that's what she's saying.
Fine.
Nigel Higgins says he's refrained from commenting too much about loopholes because he's worried about making himself a target for Mr. Bolesworth to shoot at.
Why? I don't do that.
But
I don't just go out looking for people.
He says he's one of those sado paranormal people who like to hunt for ghosts. And with his small team, they've been the target of other groups, with jealousy being the primary cause. And they'd been wrongly reported to a heritage charity, right, saying that they'd caused damage to try and prevent them from entering further properties. Okay. Things are rather insidious.
Well, I can't comment on that, lest it be seen as an attack. Furious with it, was it? Who was it? Let me take him down. Who said it?
No, we're not doing this. But he is also, he wanted to add that he had never broken into empty or abandoned buildings. But he has seen a video on YouTube where two urban explorers go into what they think is an abandoned property, only to find that it was still occupied by someone.
Oh, there we go. Good comments. Thank you, everyone. I'm enjoying these comments, you know.
Me too. Love it. That sounded insincere.
It really did. Should we just start? Let's just start the episode.
Oh, welcome to Loopholes episode 6.
Do we have a topic of discussion for Loopholes today? Or are you just going to carry on being rude to people who've been good enough to listen to it?
I'm not being rude. I'm being appreciative. It's not my fault that I have a horrific speaking voice.
And a sarcastic tone to you.
I know, it's horrible.
Did it affect you at school?
Well, that I was loathed by my classmates and teachers alike. Yes, of course, it was a constant problem.
Oh, God. I didn't mean to open up wounds like
let's
that.
Let's talk about childhood trauma.
No, let's not. What are we going to talk about today? What's the topic for the day?
We're going to talk about dollies.
Dollies?
Haunted dolls.
Right, haunted, okay.
Which I think is something that you're relatively opinionated about.
Well, sort of I am, but I do. Yeah. I guess I would flag up before any of this discussion that it's based on relatively limited knowledge of it.
Hmm.
I always think it's quite important to say that you're not speaking in definitives. I'm just going on the bits that I know and my own personal experience of it, which is limited. Or I have known people who have haunted dolls.
Yeah.
But that's all I've got to fish from. I've not done any further research or reading into such a stupid idea.
Well,
feels pointless, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, I think haunted dolls are quite an interesting kind of subset of the world of the paranormal and kind of paranormal collecting. We haven't talked about that yet.
Is it big with the goths?
I won't say especially. I'd honestly say it was more of a big thing with the horror crowd.
So who's buying all that Nightmare Before Christmas junk that I see in the corner of Forbidden Planet?
The teenagers. It's baby bats. It's teenagers that then grow up to become slightly more annoying goths and flog a load of their Nightmare Before Christmas stuff on eBay.
Oh, God willing, grow out of it.
Look, who is the one that's meant to be insulting this episode?
Sorry. Well, let's explain, and by let's, as in I mean you, explain what haunted dolls actually are.
Well, haunted dolls are pretty self-explanatory, really. They're usually human-like effigies, human dolls that are believed to have had either a curse placed upon them or are inhabited by a spirit, generally a malevolent spirit, although nowadays there's a bit of a handy mix of malevolent and whatever the other one is. Oh, is it benevolent?
So, well, there we go. Well, you said, it's very self-explanatory, but that's a misunderstanding that I'd already had, which is I thought that the personality of the haunting of a doll was the personality of the doll itself. I'm thinking of Chucky.
Yeah.
But you're saying it's an exterior.
I think generally speaking,
spirit or demon or whatever that's attached itself to a perfectly innocent doll.
Yeah.
So why do they look so evil?
Because they're the ones that will sell.
Well, here's the thing. I think that's a good point. They don't look evil at all. Everything's projection.
Yeah, of course.
It's a perfectly innocent looking doll. And people go, oh, it's creepy, isn't it? It's like, no, it's really creepy because you're thinking of it as having a ghost in it.
Yeah.
But purely aesthetically, they don't tend to be creepy. Sometimes you get an old and knackered doll that looks creepy by accident that you'll pick up in a vintage shop or whatever. But generally speaking, these dolls are very traditional, straightforward little girl dolls.
Generally, if a haunted doll story comes up in tabloids, as they are prone to nowadays.
Are they? Okay.
Oh, yeah. There's a haunted doll every month, really. And they're generally collector's porcelain dolls.
Right.
Usually from the 90s, the sort of things that your Nana would collect along with, you know, commemorative Diana plates, things like that.
Right.
And so they've sort of been reappropriated from being twee little Victorian likenesses to vessels for restless spirits.
Okay.
I think there's kind of there's the legends of haunted dolls that are like interesting stories and haunted dolls that you can visit. And then there are haunted dolls that are marketed to collectors via online auction sites.
So my next question was going to be, so what makes a haunted doll? Where would you get it from? And I guess it often just comes down to what somebody wants to write in the description on an eBay listing, doesn't it?
Generally.
So I could sell anything as haunted on eBay.
And people do.
And some Burke would buy it.
I've seen coins sold as being haunted.
Right.
Loads of jewellery. Jewellery is always haunted. Toys and dolls, they don't even have to be dolls. They can be like Fluffy Garfields and they can be harnessing the spirit of a 6,000-year-old demon if you search deep enough in the listings.
So in a sense, creatively, you could market that sort of thing if you were just good enough at writing a backstory for something.
Oh, absolutely.
You could literally sell anything on eBay for twice the price you'd get if you didn't say it was haunted.
Yes, if you'd look at a doll that you'd sell for like a fiver in a charity shop.
Yeah.
I'm just picking a listing at random here. I'm a medium and I collect haunted dolls. If they need a new home, I sell them. She is looking for a new home. This is Megan, shy, very active haunted doll. And a lot of these listings will have, like you say, full backstories.
So that was an actual listing that's online at the moment?
This is a live listing, and Megan lived in England, Bradford, West Yorkshire. She passed away at only 8 years old from house fire. Her two older sisters passed away a couple days after her. The house fire that happened was in some late 70s, 80s. She is a very shy spirit, so please be nice and respectful when you get her and welcome her in with some offerings. She loves crystals, loves looking out the window.
This is tailor-made for me as a business, because I'm actually, for all my non-belief in all this esoteric stuff,
yes,
I'm quite good at coming up with scary scenarios.
Oh, yeah.
So really, I could set up a business, not under my real name, selling tat as haunted.
Yeah.
Because I'd be able to write a good backstory. I mean, I already beat that listing. Just grammatically, I would beat that listing.
Yeah. These mediums don't seem to have many proofreaders on site, do they?
What do we think of that in terms of exploitation? Are we accepting, first off, by the way, I mean, we know that I am, but are you accepting, first off, by the way, that this isn't a thing? That person who's writing that knows full well that whatever they're selling doesn't have that history that they've put on it.
Yeah, personally, when it comes to these 500 listings of made-to-order haunted China dolls, I don't think there's anything in it. I do think that's just a way to make a quick buck, really.
And I'm not sure if that is exploitative. I'm not certain that it is.
Because it's tricky, because you're selling something physical.
Yeah.
The buyer will receive something. It's not like you're buying something completely intangible. It's just the selling point is the intangible aspects. As far as like consumer rights go, it must be in a weird grey area. I mean, what happens if you get your doll and you go, this isn't haunted at all? Who'd you complain to? Because they could say, well, it was haunted when I set it off.
Speak to Royal Mail.
Yeah.
I mean, what even is haunted? How would that even display itself with a doll? What are you promising there? You're just saying that there's a backstory to it. I guess there would be half an argument about it exploiting people's beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if your belief system allows for such manipulation in that way, then some onus has to fall on the purchaser as well, I think.
Yeah.
I find that a difficult one because it doesn't feel the same in terms of exploitation. It doesn't feel the same as the Michael Jackson seance.
Yeah.
I understand why those kids at that seance were so upset.
Yeah, completely.
It was because they had invested in a previously tangible thing. Michael Jackson, as a performer, as an icon, as an image, whatever their love of him was, the exploitation aspect of that was they took people that they knew already had heightened feelings about this individual and dangled the carrot that he was there.
Yes.
So it wasn't that they were all really into seances or they really thought about afterlife. I don't know what their beliefs were on that respect. And it doesn't really matter what their beliefs are in that respect. I get why they were exploited. I get it totally.
Yeah.
But I feel like selling something where the consumer comes to you, I don't know if it is exploitation, I'm not sure.
I don't know, is it an exploitation of credulity? I think with that listing in particular, the fact that they're selling it on the basis of a fictional, well, let's presume fictional, child's death, just I think maybe that's just poor taste rather than exploitative. So it's being sold as an appealing prospect because you have a doll with a dead child attached.
So straight off the bat then, we already have, let's call it a speculative loophole,
yeah,
which is that we suspect, And common sense would probably dictate, well, actually personal experience would dictate that we're right, because I've already, my own ears pricked up at the idea that I could monetize this as an idea. So yeah. If I've thought it in passing, surely someone a bit more time on their hands and a bit more drive than me would actually go through with it and do this. So we suspect as part of this subsection of esoterocism that there are people who are knowingly misleading that certain dolls are haunted. So that's a general speculative loophole that is happening. So that's part of the parameters that we're working within at the moment.
Yeah, I think they definitely fall into a legal loophole. As a consumer, you're still going to be receiving something tangible, even though that's not what's selling it to you.
Yeah.
So that's more the packaging rather than the product.
I mean, it's a bit unpleasant, but it's also just straightforward marketing, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Yes, yeah.
I think that's why I'm struggling with there being an ethical issue beyond the inherent ethical issues of marketing, full stop. So I struggle with this one a bit. What are your experiences of haunted dolls? Do you have any experiences of haunted dolls yourself? Have you got any in your house?
No, don't own a haunted doll. I've got some odd bits and bobs, certainly, but I haven't ever gone out and bought a haunted doll. I have a haunted painting, supposedly.
What's that?
I have a copy of The Crying Boy.
Oh, you have? You've got The Crying Boy on your stairs, haven't you? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have that as kind of like a nod to spooky slash cursed, supposedly cursed objects.
Yeah, and I guess your ownership of that and subsequent display of that tells us all straight away that you don't subscribe to the idea that it will make your house burn down, because lots of houses in the 70s that had house fires had the Crying Boy painting in their house.
Yeah, but strangely enough, considering how popular they were, they're really hard to get hold of nowadays.
And you can't even argue, because people say, yeah, that's because they all burnt down, because part of the myth of the Crying Boy fires was that the painting survived the fire.
Exactly.
Because it's painted with a varnish that doesn't burn.
Yeah.
That's why. And also, the thing that I think gets forgotten about the Crying Boy painting, when people say it's a cursed painting and people say, oh, there's a risk of your house catching fire and all the rest of it, what they're forgetting, I think, when they spout this garbage, here are the simple facts. Having the Crying Boy painting in your house will not cause a house fire. Categorically, sue me if you want. It will not. I am saying that as a definitive. Yeah. It will not cause a house fire. And what I'm also saying as a definitive is, it will also not prevent one. If you have a house fire in your house and you have the Crying Boy, there is no link between two things.
Honestly, I was so chuffed when I found my copy of The Crying Boy. It was a very exciting trip I took to Skegness to pick up two versions of it for 15 quid. I honestly thought people would see it as, oh, this is a bit of a novelty. Oh, it feeds into Kate's questionable taste in decor. But I put a picture up on my social media a while ago, and so many friends were straight on me saying, not a cat and elf's chance I'd have that in my house.
So weird.
People that have never said they held any paranormal or esoterotic beliefs were suddenly like, that better not be what I think it is.
People have the same thing about Ouija boards though, don't they?
Yeah.
Even I know right-minded people that I consider who would go, I wouldn't mess with a Ouija board. It's like, well, then you must subscribe to it then in that case. Yeah. I'd mess with a Ouija board all day, happily. Yeah. But going back to haunted dolls, in the same mood, why are people going buying something? Let's say that they're real.
Okay.
That we are being too cynical here, that they actually are haunted. Why do people want to bring that into their house?
I suppose it's the thrill. It's the case of, if people aren't sure, oh, it might be haunted, it might not. We can link this in to people having it off in graveyards.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the thrill of, oh, I might get caught by the cemetery workers. Oh, isn't it exciting? There may be consequences.
I've already extrapolated on this in my head.
Okay.
So I've used the same argument that I've used for people not having Ouija boards in their house because they believe them to be dark forces or whatever, then they must subscribe to it. That's my take on it.
Yeah.
So I would also argue further that somebody buying a haunted doll must not subscribe to it because they wouldn't bring that into their house. So they must know that this is smoke and mirrors. Like you with the Crying Boy picture, you know what I mean? Yeah. You bought that because of the legend attached to it.
Yes.
You know full well that doesn't cause a house fire.
Yeah.
Because if there was any proof that it did, which, by the way, there isn't. Don't start writing to me. There isn't any proof. You wouldn't have it in your house.
Yeah, of course. I think we both know people who own supposed haunted dolls, and they see them as haunted, but positively haunted.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anyone. Like, I have come across people, and I have briefly... I wouldn't say I know anyone particularly well.
Yeah.
Again, reiterating that this is a very limited amount of experience of it, I have certainly noticed within that limited experience trends within the sort of people that have them.
Yeah.
And I should also say as a caveat as well that I understand only too well forming an attachment with an inanimate object. I get
yes.
that.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
I have plenty of things myself. I'm very bad for attaching emotional things to objects, like whether someone's bought me something or something's representative of a certain time or whatever it is. Like, I have mugs that if they broke, I would be devastated to the point of near grief, like quite close to grief.
Yeah.
So I've noticed in the people that I have peripherally known to be into haunted dolls and stuff, generally tend to be lonery kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
So single, certainly. And that's been part of their personality,
mm-hmm.
that they're loners. And I think this might sound like quite a big judgment call.
Mm-hmm.
So please remember all my caveats that I've thrown into this. But I think there's an element of, I think there's an immaturity to it.
Okay.
And I don't mean an immaturity of playing with dollies or having dolls. I have got loads of what could be described as dolls in my house. And I don't consider that to be immature. But I think the projection onto that of a personality is quite an immature thing.
Yeah.
It's like when people name their cars and call it she.
Yes. Yeah,
that sort of thing. Now, I remember having an awful car when I was at university that often didn't start.
Mm-hmm.
Flick of a coin whether it would start or not. And I would sometimes get into that car on a cold Yorkshire morning and go, right, come on, mate, come on. like rub its dashboard. Yeah. Come on, mate, come on. And then it'd start and I'd go, thank you, mate. I appreciate that. Thank you. So I guess I was projecting a personality onto it. But it didn't have one in my head. But I think if you have a doll that you've, again, we'll say projected a personality onto, that has then gone into the realms of believing that it's actually cognitive in some way.
Yeah.
But do you know what? There's a sinister aspect to that as well. Uh-huh. Or that what could be perceived as a sinister aspect to that in terms of someone's personality and how they interplay with other human beings. It's having an inanimate object that you that is your friend.
Yeah, that needs you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's, if it was a kid, we'd be worried. If it was an actual kid.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably best that it is a doll or whatever it is. You know, when but this is people, I mean, who interact with them. And I think I've known of maybe 5, maybe 6 people in my entire life who I've known to have this subscription to the haunted doll thing, talked about them like they were actual people.
Yes.
That's perhaps the immaturity part of it mixed a little bit with, why can't you talk to a real person? Even Geppetto wanted Pinocchio to become real. do you know what I mean, though?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm trying not to be too harsh with it, but it's the way I sometimes feel about when you see documentaries about single fellas with some 6-7 grand real-life sex doll thing who they've got sat next to them, or they dress, and they talk to them, and it's that level of immaturity coupled with, is that what you view as being a partner? Not treating somebody like an object. It is an actual object.
Yeah. I think that's the same reason that people find haunted dolls creepy and big rubber girlfriends freaky.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're human, but they're inhuman. They kind of embody this uncanniness.
Yeah.
Much like masks, where we can project feelings, stories, personalities onto them, but they will have a fixed, unreadable expression, which kind of makes them scarier in a way because you can't read them. So although people like with massive sex dolls will be able to say, oh, this is Linda, tonight she's feeling frisky, when really Linda's just stuck in one rigid position forever.
Yeah.
You know, in the same case, someone could say, oh, this is Lucinda. Lucinda is the ghost of a chimney sweep attached to a porcelain doll. You know, it's the same
but
sort of
thing. It's still a projected personality,
isn't it? Yeah,
it's something
projected.
Decided or being told that you're actually applying as, I don't know, it's not, but it's not even suspension of disbelief, is it?
No, like it's kind of, it's creating your own.
With a sex doll, it would be.
Yeah, it's like creating your own weird symbiotic relationship with something that, anything reciprocal is in your own mind.
Yeah, but a sex doll would be, you would know going in that it wasn't cognitive, that you just have to suspend your own disbelief.
Yeah.
And can live out the fantasy, whatever you do with it. But I think there's a difference between that and projecting a personality that you then subscribe to as a fact.
Yeah.
Maybe that does happen with sex dolls, you know. Maybe that does.
I was going to say, I would put money on there being a haunted sex doll somewhere.
Yeah, yeah,
or
yeah.
a sex doll that's got a demonic attachment to it.
That's not ectoplasm, mate. I'm going to have to write to PayPal about this. So what's your take then? I obviously, predictably, don't believe anything to be haunted at all.
Yeah.
Not just dolls, anything. But what's your take on that? I've spoke about, I guess, the human attachment to an object.
Yes, yeah.
But the same word would be used for a spirit attachment. So if it was haunted, something attaching itself to it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in a bit of a grey area as far as haunted objects goes.
Well, you better get out of that grey area if you don't want a load of comments slagging you off.
Well, I just find it so interesting. I'm not going to say, I believe. Well, I have not thus far met a haunted doll that I believed was anything other than just an old porcelain doll from a charity shop.
Yeah.
But I find the idea of attachments just outside of this doll context and just in a general ghost hunting context quite interesting.
Yeah.
And I don't want to come down as not believing on that, because from my ghost botherer perspective, I find it something really interesting to look into. But when it comes to haunted dolls, I think most of it is how we project onto things. But I also believe that maybe in moments of extreme emotional trauma or, things like that, things where you leave like a deep emotional impact on a space. Much like stone tape theories, those sort of things.
Yeah.
I find that to be the most convincing argument there could be towards like the validity of attachments to dolls.
Just explain stone tape theory, by the way, because we're using buzzwords here.
Stone tape theory isn't a really popular buzzword at the minute. I mean, people have extrapolated from that and use far more eloquent things nowadays. But broadly speaking, stone tape theory is that buildings, materials, minerals, things like that can hang on to the energy of emotions. Like if a traumatic event or a powerful event had happened in a certain location, a sort of memory of sorts, like an energy memory, can continue in those places. And whether that's interpreted as, that is why there's a weird temperature in here, or that's why we keep seeing ghosts everywhere, or it was seen as an alternative.
Yeah, there are certain sections within the esoteric community that say that's what ghosts are.
Yeah,
they're not spirits living now in the afterlife. They are echoes and recordings of the past,
like energy imprints.
So whilst, again, predictably, I don't believe in that as a thing, I also understand it on a, should we call it, spiritual level? I get when people are that way inclined.
Yeah.
I understand the idea of even just bringing that down to its most basic form of going, well, this ring that was my grandma's ring, I can feel an energy from it.
Yes.
I have more of an understanding of that whilst not subscribing to it to someone going, and if you listen very carefully, my grandma is in it and you can hear her talking. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
There's a difference, isn't there, between feeling like something just has a sense of someone to it.
Yeah.
Which I think you're bringing yourself. But either way, I get that.
Yeah.
I don't get the other part of it, of having it as a, again, cognitive, I suppose. So, something that is existing on its own terms within an object.
Mm-hmm. I think really a modern interest in horror and horror films, that sort of thing, has really fed into this interest in haunted dolls in particular.
Because of like Annabelle and stuff like that.
Yeah, when infamous, like the A-lister haunted dolls like Robert the Doll, Annabelle, Letter the Doll have been reinterpreted in the media and reinterpreted with these really creepy, sinister backstories. I think it's kind of a bit like buying merchandise from series we like, especially with the Conjuring franchise and everything that went around Annabelle, which, people who don't know, was a Raggedy Ann sort of cloth doll who was owned by student nurses in the 70s. A medium told them that a child spirit called Annabelle was attached to it. The nurses welcomed it, and turned out it wasn't a nice little girl spirit, and quite horrible things started to happen. And then it was taken into the possession of the Warrens, who were a very famous ghost hunting demonologist couple.
Yeah.
And that Annabelle doll, which most of our listeners will know, sparked off several different franchises now. You can buy replica Annabelle dolls in Forbidden Planet and different shops like that. And same with Robert the Doll. If you go and visit that doll in Key West, I think he is in Florida, the gift shop has little miniature Robert the Dolls that you can take home yourself.
Yeah.
So I think there's an element of feeding into a subculture within a subculture and wanting something tangible to bring home and put on your shelf to show just how interested you are.
So really, in terms of the varied discussion that we've had today, we have got the loophole answer, haven't we? And we were right in our suspicion earlier on. Marketing.
Yeah.
This is all marketing. This is getting rid of that box of dolls you bought. Thinking they would sell on their own terms.
Yeah. It's the equivalent of free toy and cereal.
Yeah. And is there any, do you know of any doll story of haunted dolls? Because I've heard the Robert the Doll stuff and all that, and it's all paper thin.
Yeah.
And I think the Annabelle thing's paper thin as well, because the people that bought it needed it to be haunted for their business. Yeah. It had to be.
I don't know if they bought it, by the way. I think they might have been given it, like most of the things in their museum.
Yeah, okay. Well, why have they took it on? If they truly subscribe to it being dangerous, it has to be dangerous for the story. It has to be.
Yes, but also then, you know, from the other side of things, you know, they were collecting all of these things to keep them out of the public's grasp and keep them locked away. Like Annabelle itself was locked away in a glass case, saying, you know, absolutely, positively, do not open, you know. Which, again, excellent marketing. But you can see how the arguments would come from both sides there. Because the Warrens did dedicate their life to this sort of thing and exorcism and all that sort of thing.
Come on, mate. Come on.
Well, I think there are some very interesting stories.
Bless you. Bless you for being fair.
I like the Warrens. I do. And come I don't on, want to speak
hey,
ill of
hey,
them.
Hey, come on. You're smarter than this.
Well, it's that time of the week again.
That was your unfortunate vocal tone again. Well.
Oh, okay, no, come on.
If anyone's still listening.
Oh, God, look, it's everyone's favourite section.
Well, then why do we do the other ones?
It's Celebrity Seance Corner. Let me sing the jingle.
Fine.
It's Celebrity Seance Corner. With me, your cheerful friend.
Yeah. You should start doing that in your life, just pointing out the mood that you're in.
Okay, yeah.
Regardless of my demeanour, I am actually cheerful.
Yes. Well, this week...
Yeah.
It did feel like we might have peaked with the Michael Jackson sale.
I think we did.
But fear not.
Why?
Because there is a deep well of celebrity seances for us to reach down and retrieve in a lovely pail of spiritual water.
Oh, your metaphor started creaking and you pulled it back right at the end. So what celebrity is being contacted this week, please?
This week, we will be contacting the ghost of Oscar Wilde.
Wow.
The famous playwright, author, wit and raconteur.
Wow. Now, can I say something straight off the bat?
Yes.
We saw what difficulty Derek Acora had with capturing the personality of Michael Jackson to the point where he had to say, can somebody say hello to Quincy Jones for me? As a grasping idea. But Oscar Wilde, super sharp, super witty.
Yeah.
You know, it's some stones on someone saying that they can contact Oscar Wilde, who's going to have to perform as Oscar Wilde within the seance.
Yeah, of all people to choose to channel.
Yeah.
Picking the world's greatest wit shows
a
staggering optimism in your own abilities.
It really does, doesn't it? And perhaps maybe delusional as well, that you could manage to pull that off, as, unless they truly believe that they have contacted Oscar Wilde. But I anticipate some element of, there's only one thing worse than being talked about. I've got nothing. I've got nothing. I thought I could blag this. I've got nothing. Oscar has been much less witty since dying. He's quite annoyed about it. He's not feeling in the mood for jokes today.
Well, just you wait and see. You can make your judgment at the end of the seance.
Who did it? I'm hoping it's Derek Acora, but I'm guessing not.
Sadly not.
Oh.
No. This seance took place on the 20th of August, 1962.
Right.
And this was with the direct voice medium, Leslie Flint. Now, direct voice mediumship, I just want to say first, this isn't like your normal common or garden seance.
Okay.
So direct voice mediumship, for those who believe in it, of course, spirits use the energy of the medium to create their own voice and communicate without the need for the medium's vocal cords. So there will be a disembodied voice in the room.
Right.
Separate from the mediums, and the voice and the medium can, in theory, have a back and forth conversation.
So there, with my cynical, straight logical head on, there's mm-hmm. nothing to worry about in the improvisational stakes, because this would imply to me some degree of prep. Has there been a recording already made? Is somebody else somewhere with a script?
Okay. I see you.
Yeah.
Well, to aid these direct voice mediums, Leslie Flint in particular, it was a British medium who kind of made his name by trading in dead celebrities.
Right.
But he did his seances as dark seances, so in darkness, sometimes in a cupboard.
Of course. Well, otherwise you'd be able to see the other person, wouldn't you, of course, if it wasn't dark.
And he'd be bound and gagged to show that he wasn't throwing his voice.
Yeah.
And then voices would appear behind him.
And as we know, Mr. Flint was the only person in the world who could speak.
I mean, fine, yes.
So that's watertight.
I mean, people have spoken about pre-recorded voices, live accomplices and ventriloquism, but we will get to those later.
Okay. I'm disappointed it wasn't a Cora. And I'd love to have seen a Cora do Oscar Wilde, like he did with the Michael Jackson seance when he did that thing about saying, this hat, I'm seeing it in the air. I don't know why it's in the air. I'd love him to do the same sort of blag with Oscar Wilde, just being like, I'm in a gutter. But I'm looking at stars. I don't know why I'm looking at stars. Oh, these people. Go on.
So this was a really intimate seance, really. There was only the medium and two sitters there. But Leslie Flint made thousands of recordings of his seances.
Right. So wait, so this recording is no different to what we're doing now. So you and I now...
Mm-hmm.
I could say that I'm here on my own in the recording.
Yeah.
And then you could go, ooh, I'm here as well. And I'd be like, oh, who's that? Who's that?
Yeah. Don't ruin the magic of the seance.
Right, okay. So we've got Leslie Flint.
Yes.
And his two best mates stroke accomplices. Go on.
So he sits down, Oscar immediately, very keen to chat.
Well, you don't want to fill up a C60 with a load of silence and go, is anybody there? Do you not? You really need to... If you're going to be using this for marketing.
Yeah, well, it was... Look, Oscar was very chatty. Let's just suspend your disbelief for a minute. So in the recording, you can hear questions being posed to Mr. Wilde, who sounds like he's about 40 sherries deep in the afterlife.
Okay.
He sounds absolutely hammered. And I don't think that's intentional.
So is this Mr. Flint's mate who's been dragged into this going... Leslie, I keep thinking this is, like, morally and ethically questionable. Leslie's going, look, just we should do it. We should definitely do it. You're being Oscar Wilde. I'm being me. There's a script there. You're not going to miss anything at all. I don't want to do it. Please, just, you are my friend. We need to do this. And he's just started drinking.
Yeah.
He's like, I can't handle it. It's not about the sherries. A handbag! Let's hear about the seance. I'll shut up.
Right. Now. Oscar's very chatty, but very convoluted. So it's...
Simply was a bit Oscar Wilde in many ways.
Yeah.
Simply used to fancy himself as a bit of a wit when he was living with the king.
Yeah.
But quite heartbreakingly, he was always very self-deprecating.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd say, you know, king, there's only one thing worse than being the king. Being Simply. Oh, that's really profound, Simply. You know, king... Some of us are in the gutter, and we deserve to be.
Oh, no.
Hey, come on, Simply. Here, have a bite of my Twinkie. Not like that. It wasn't a euphemism.
Oh, God.
I have Twinkies here. Simply, what are you doing? I feel like I'm going to be sick all over your dreadlocks.
Well, Oscar is very chatty when he comes through. And one of his first quotes is, they're asking him to speak, and like, why isn't he being chatty? And he said, if I couldn't say something of value, then I'd much rather say nothing.
Did he say that in his real life as well? Is he on the record as saying that in his real life at any point?
Oh no, it gets so much worse.
I think that one's all right.
Well, let's just see. Because when he explains what it's like coming through using a medium, I think he's got some very interesting ways of explaining how mediumship is like from the other side. He said that being dead is an extraordinary business, especially when you were talking to people on Earth who were supposed to be alive and are very much dull and dim and dead in consequence.
I don't think these are bad, you know. I feel like I've had my pants pulled down a bit here.
Oh, really?
Because I think these are actually all right.
Okay.
Plausibly, if you'd said to me these were direct things that were in Oscar Wilde's literature or his plays or whatever, I wouldn't be questioning that as an off day for Oscar.
Okay. Well, generally, he's quite dull and does say in consequence, like a verbal tick. Like
okay.
Every other sentence is, using a medium is not like using a pen. In consequence, it is complicated. My name got me into a great deal of trouble when I was on your side, in consequence.
I think these are all right.
Really? Okay.
I've changed my opinion completely on Mr. Flint.
Okay, well...
I have.
Oscar's got news from the afterlife that it's not all lovely fluffy clouds in heaven, that it's not too dissimilar to here, and he's perfectly contented living a life of delicious sin.
Are we arguing that he is in the other place?
No, just that he lives through several different spiritual spheres. He explains that he's with a lot of friends, a lot of playwrights in the afterlife. He's had a chat with George Bernard Shaw. And that he has his friendships and he has his friends because you can't have friendships without friends.
Okay.
Now, what are you going to say?
It's not quite as good. I think the Sherry's maybe had kicked in a bit there.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you show illumination to a person, they'd start screaming like mad and run like mad to escape from the illumination. That's when the sherry's really started kicking in the afterlife.
Yeah, not quite as good.
Yeah.
But I guess he's perhaps being distracted by all the other celebrities that are there, like...
Mr. Wilde? Elvis Presley. Last week I met Mr. Michael Jackson. This week, I meet the great Oscar Wilde. Can someone say a little simply for me?
I don't think I'm going to rest
until
there is another Elvis seance that has nothing to do with us, where the words, can someone say hello to Simply For Me, come through. Because I think if there is afterlife and an all-seeing afterlife and all that sort of thing, and spirits can watch over people, eventually Elvis Presley in the afterlife will get wind of the fact that a fictionalised version of him is being utilised on a popular podcast every single week, and will have a listen. Elvis had a very mischievous streak to him, really.
Yeah.
Humorous, mischievous streak. I think sooner or later he would say that, let's be honest, very popular catchphrase in an actual sense.
Yeah.
That's what I want to happen. Do you know what? I will make a vow right now that I will rethink my scepticism and rethink my lack of belief if at some point we can get a verification of an unconnected seance with Elvis Presley where Elvis Presley said, can someone say hello to Simply For Me? But we have to verify that there's no possible connection.
Yeah, that sounds like a deal. Back to Mr. Wilde, who's nattering away in the afterlife. A very interesting aspect of this chat between Flint's friends and the great wit. Wilde is very, very anti-spiritualist.
Right.
And he said that he'd been to many of their so-called meetings and seances. If it were not rather sad, it would be highly amusing. It's so pathetic. So I feel like Leslie might have been spurned from his local spiritualist group.
Oh, I see. So this would be his rivals, I
guess.
I see. I thought you meant that Flint himself, like I sometimes do when I'm sat in my office, when I will look at like Star Wars toys and things and go, what are you doing, Ian? What was the reaction to this seance when it was released? Where was it released? Was it just a tape that was found in his garage after he died? Like, it could be that his family were like, no, don't release that tape of my dad. That, my dad was really ill.
No, he was...
That was after my mum left. He had two alky mates that he used to bring around and they used to pretend to be Oscar Wilde. Don't put that out. He's not a psychic in nothing. He's poorly.
It was just a very popular medium at the time where people would book and go and sit with him.
Yeah, but I think all the ways you're saying this, it could have just, over time, the story could have changed. It could be like a barman going, do us a favour, I'll give you a drink here. Say you've bought it and go over to Leslie in the corner and go and talk to him. He's he's a terribly sad man, but just let him tell you stories about ghosts and things. He's been here since 10 o'clock this morning.
Leslie was never lonely. He was always communicating with, you know, Archimedes or Marilyn Monroe or something like that.
Stories can change over time.
Yeah.
For some reason, and it might be the personality that I've projected onto him myself, for some reason, Leslie has piqued my interest. I don't know why. Is there a lot available about Leslie Flint?
There's a fair bit. He wrote an autobiography.
Which you'll have four copies of. Well, look... I'm happy to draw today's Celebrity Sounds Corner to a close. However, I would place in the request that we revisit Leslie at some point, if there is something to say, by the
way.
Oh,
I can absolutely find things.
Okay, I'm just getting an inkling. He's piqued my interest, and I'm not sure why.
Yeah, but I'd like to say, in the words of Oscar Wilde, if I may.
Yeah.
Words, words, words. They can say a great deal. I should know.
That's his drunk mate running out of things to say. There we go. That was episode 6 of Loopholes.
Yep.
Thank you for joining us, as always. And here now is Dr. Kate Cherrill with information about how to contact us, as many of you have been doing, and we encourage you to continue to do that, because secretly, in real life, we discuss your comments quite a lot, and we are secretly chuffed with them.
We really are.
Here's Kate with all the contact details.
Right. Please do get in touch via many, many means. You can find us on social media, on Facebook at Loopholes Podcast, on Instagram at Loopholes Pod, on Twitter at Loopholes Pod, or you can send us an email at loopholespodcast@gmail.com. Or just leave a comment on either of our Patreons.
Yeah, and don't worry at all. I'm not going to make fun of you at all in the comments. It's not that sort of thing. I won't make fun of you like stupid Nigel said earlier on, the big baby. So by all means, do get in touch as and when you wish to. I've been Dr. Ian Bolesworth.
And I have been Kate Cherrill.
We'll see you again next week.
Bye.
Loopholes is an Infinite Hermit production in association with Burials and Beyond, with Kate Cherrill and Ian Bolesworth. Music by Thomas Funderay, produced by Ian Bolesworth.